Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller, and this is NPR News. For the rest of the hour, a conversation many of us have been craving as the days get short and the winter weather closes in and political discord still reigns. This is a show we did last winter about resilience and happiness. My guest, Mayo Clinic's Dr. Amit Sood, wrote a book on the subject. So let's go in depth on cultivating resilience in your own life. It's a buzzword in education reform, figuring out how to build resilience in kids. Research indicates it can be every bit as valuable as classroom learning. But think about how connected resilience in adult life is with happiness. The ability to manage life's disappointments, to regain your vitality after a serious setback. Dr. Amit Sood argues in his new book that compassion, gratitude, and awareness will put us more firmly on the path to a happier life than pursuing some vision of happiness ever will. Dr. Amit Sood is chair of the Mind-Body Medicine Initiative at Mayo Clinic. His new book is titled The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness, and he's with us today from Rochester. Dr. Sood, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Good morning. Great to be with you. It's snowing this morning, and I'm thinking about all those who are involved in snow business, the snow plows, and I'm happy for them. And that's how I'm reframing the snow hair and trying to be happy.
Oh, my gosh. I was thinking about your book as I was grumbling through a two-hour commute this morning. I thought, no, don't let it get you down. You must bounce back and be resilient. That's what Dr. Sood would want me to do. So here I am, all good and resilient, ready to talk. I think we ought to define what we mean by resilience, because I don't want people to think, well, it's just about brushing off your troubles and marching on. That's not what you're thinking about. I get the sense in this book.
Yeah, well, resilience, technically, if you see it, is your ability to withstand adversity and bounce back relatively quickly from adversity. To give you a metaphor, when you're driving, for example, I'm sure you have ended on the rumble strip a couple of times, particularly when you're drowsy on the road. And so from the rumble strip, you can end in the ditch or you can recover back on the highway. The idea is to recover quickly on the highway of life rather than going into the ditch. Resilience is very relative and it's a very dynamic process. It's not that one is resilient, the other is not. There are different grades of resilience and you can always be a little bit more resilient than you were.
Is there a, I guess I think of it as you go through a tough time, but you gain some wisdom and you draw some energy from having gone through that tough time. I mean, as I think about some, you know, more difficult times in my life, I look back and go, and I learned this and I got that from that. Is there something to that as well in your idea of resilience?
Absolutely. Thank you for adding that. So resilience is not negating the reality or unbridled optimism. It is acknowledging that I'm going through a tough time, validating your responses to that. And sometimes those are maladaptive mm-hmm. responses. And then through that validation, recognizing and accepting that, you know, sometimes clouds choose to rain on my town and that's the reality. And then through that process, learning, reframing, recontextualizing, and finding ways to grow from that experience. So instead of getting into post-traumatic stress situation, you actually get into post-traumatic growth situation.
You've used the word stress, and I want to talk about that because I think listeners might think, well, I could be a lot more resilient if I wasn't having to deal with this chronic stress in my life. You say stress is your struggle with what is. Okay, what does that mean?
Well, the reality is we are much better off than we were 100 years ago. Despite the headlines, the world continues to get better. We are financially better off. We are health-wise better off. But the brain has a tendency to revise expectations. Honey, I love you, but now please change. That often happens after you've been married 15, 20 years. So we readjust to what is right in life, and we stop seeing all that is good in our life. And that is how we struggle. Happier people are not those who have less negative experience. Happier people have more positive emotions, and they create those experiences. So our stress is related to somewhat to the reality, but greater stress is how we react to the reality. And are we able to see it in the totality of picture, or are we too zoomed in and seeing that this next challenge is the most overwhelming experience of my life?
When you say zoomed in, you mean this is the thing that's right in front of me and I'm consumed with trying to deal with that and I can't see the big picture. Stress dealing with what is, right?
Absolutely. So when I look at, for example, I talk to medical students and they are concerned about their anatomy exam and they're too zoomed in. And often I have asked them, and told them that no patient has ever asked me my anatomy grades before seeing me as a patient. So I invite them to zoom out. You know, humans as such are too zoomed in. We are too short term focused. So when you zoom out and look at life in totality, you realize that my challenge today won't matter to me 5 years from now. So I shouldn't, burn a few neurons in my brain and increase my risk of heart attack just a little bit and increase my blood pressure because I have spilled milk on the dining table. So being able to zoom out and keeping that perspective, that is what helps you deal with what is.
Can I guess that you aced those anatomy exams? I just have a feeling you did.
I don't remember my anatomy scores myself.
Who cares, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I often share with medical students is that medicine is actually using technology and knowledge to deliver compassion. Medicine is not delivering knowledge and technology. Robots can do that. Softwares can do that. We are actually delivering compassion. And that is what med school is about, to become more compassionate and learn that.
Boy, I've never heard a description of medical school that makes so much sense. Let's take a call from Christina in Duluth. Hi, Christina.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for inviting stories about resiliency. I want to tell a story about my mom. My mom just turned 87, mm-hmm. and I feel like she is the happiest person ever. She started out with quite a bit of trauma in her life early on, losing her mother at 8, dealt with a lot of racism, a lot of historic trauma, married, had children. Her husband died in a car accident, leaving her with 5 children in poverty, literally living in a tar paper shack. My dad came along, they married, things got stressful, led into some domestic violence. She divorced him, again, finding herself in poverty. We are homeless till I was about 13, and facing again, dozens of examples of racism, being American Indian in Northern Minnesota. So she just kept pushing through and pushing through and pushing through. And all through that time, of course, we would see situations where she was stressed and crabby, but she always had such a great outlook and believed anything could happen. And then recently in her life, she's gone through in the last 10 years a multiple myeloma diagnosis, in the last 3 years, 2 colostomies, a reversal surgery for that. It's just been, she's an amazing woman and resilient. The example of what he talks about when it comes to zooming in and zooming out and coping.
It's wow. Christina. Remarkable. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you called.
This is my mom.
She is inspiring. I can't imagine. I bet you don't even know all the things you've learned from her, but you've clearly learned a lot.
Truly wow. don't. We call her Wonder Woman our family. And her Anishinaabe name is Chi Ekwewis, which means that she's a very important woman. It's pretty incredible.
I'm so glad you called. Dr. Sood, I couldn't have set this up better to have Christina be our first caller. What do you take from that?
Absolutely. Christina, you have a sage in your life. And won't it be lovely that your daughter would be calling 20 years from now and talking about you without the hopefully without the adversity, you evolve into be a resilient person like your mom. If I have to bet, your mom is a very selfless person. I've asked this question to tens of thousands of people. Think about someone in your life, in group setting many times, who reminds you who is the model of resilience. And repeatedly, there are two themes that emerge. One is people who are very resilient are very selfless. They don't think about themselves. They have a very flexible zoom. They can zoom in, zoom out, but they're mostly thinking about others. And these people often have very good role models, be it spiritual role models or real life role models. So those are the two core anchors. And I have no doubt in my mind, Christina, that your mom is a very selfless person.
Dr. Sood, now Christina's mother had the kind of adversity that it sounds like it was enough for three lifetimes. It does resilience, I mean, is it a cause and effect? Well, I'll have resilience when I've had adversity and I've learned how to deal with that. Or can you build a certain amount of resilience in the absence of great adversity?
Resilience, as some people call, some researchers call, is ordinary magic. All of us have it. Nobody is born with zero resilience. But this is something like muscles, like your biceps, you can definitely build. So there are broadly three variables that impact you, how resilient you are feeling at any moment. One is your genetic endowment. And there's a lot of studies happening that your genetic makeup can actually impact your resilience. The second is your life situation. Actually, as Christina was telling, there's something called stress inoculation, which is basically, what doesn't kill you make you stronger. So when you go through life's adversities, you actually turn out to be happier and more resilient than having a plain vanilla, you know, no adversity at all in your life. So second is life situation. But the third and perhaps the most significant variable in resilience is the choices you make. Whether you choose to recontextualize life situation, whether you choose to zoom out, whether you choose to connect with people who care about you. And when people don't care about you, you let them go from your life and you do not let them live in your heart and your brain for any longer than they have to.
I loved the way you described how you manage stress and how important imagination is in that. And you write this in your preface. I learned how imagination, our most powerful tool, locks us into creating and living countless what-ifs that trap us into exhausting ruminations, worrying and thinking about catastrophes. Now, I know that imagination can be a force for good, so tell me how to do that and not letting it lock you into those what-ifs.
Yeah. Personally, let me tell you my medical story. So I've had two heart attacks, three cancers, multiple strokes, nearly died many times, all in my head. I've been imagining all this. And every time I thought about these, I said, okay, I will not think this way in the future, but I have. So imagination is very powerful. Actually, imagination is real. What you think is what your brain is experiencing, actually, as if it is materializing. So what you want to do is arrange your imagination around some pro-social long-term meaning. And you want to align your short-term thinking with that long-term meaning. And when you're serving that long-term meaning, then the short-term imaginations align together and help you grow rather than take you toward catastrophe. You know, Mark Twain said something very nice. He always had the last and best words. He said, I've suffered several terrible things in my life, some of which actually happened. And so trying to align your imagination with your life's purpose, I think that is the key. And if your attention is going towards negative imagination, question yourself whether this is this makes sense, how realistic it is. And if it is not, then you have to let it go or replace it with an alternative like we have with gratitude, with compassion, with acceptance, with higher meaning.
I find it extraordinary that you're a physician. Maybe this is why, and that your imagination has convinced you that you've had cancer and heart attacks. I mean, if anybody ought to be able to say, I know what's going on, I'm not going to let my imagination run away with me, it should be you.
You are right. I'm humbled by the irrationality of my mind, which makes me more compassionate towards my patients. So when I have my right shoulder pain, I thought I had Pancoast tumor of the lung. When I woke up with heartburn in Denver, I thought, this is it. I'm going to have... And actually, when I woke up after sleeping for 4 hours, I tried to feel my, you know, surrogate body part, my smartphone, just to make sure I'm on planet Earth and didn't wake up on the other side. This really happened. So I have a bit of craziness within me that helps me be real, actually.
Dr. Amit Sood, he's the author of the Mayo Clinic Handbook to Happiness, and we talked last November. Listening back to the conversation because, well, this is the time of the year that resilience can really pay off. When a listener called into the discussion to say that resilience doesn't mean facing your struggles alone, Dr. Sood had this insight.
Part of resilience is recognizing where I need help and who should I seek help from, because unless you can only lift so much load of life. And one thing to recognize is that when you, in a well-meaning way, seek help from people, you're actually helping them, because what research, a large body of research shows, is that by helping others, you're actually helping yourself even more. So, you know, like with little kids, when you ask little kids to, you know, empty the dishwasher or clean up the room a little bit, tidy up the room, you're actually helping them. Mother Teresa, when she started her work, she started skipping lunch because she would give the food to poor kids who were very hungry. And by day 3 or 4, she fainted. And her father at that time said that unless you take care of yourself, you're not going to be able to take care of others. So then she realized that she has to eat to live. So you have to take care of yourself before you can start taking care of others fully.
David Aiken called. He says, my dad was a flawed person, but he taught me resilience. He always said to imagine a ship's mast. You may creak and groan and twist a little in the wind, but don't break. To the phone's demise in St. Paul. Hey, good morning. Hi.
Hi. My question is for Dr. Sood is, what happens if you lived a pretty happy life and you're resilient, but something really drastic happens, like you get a very serious illness that then changes the outcome of the rest of your life? How do you then become happy again?
That's good.
When you are happy to begin with already.
Good question. And you can't have your life back exactly the way it was.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, there is going to be a period of readjustment where, and I don't know how much earlier was this event, but initial step is, of course, not to just say everything is fine, but to validate your hurts and acknowledge them and own them and obviously seek help from your friends and colleagues and loved ones and books and counselors and whatever you need to do. And of course, maximize your physical capacity, recovery from the illness. But certainly if you're left with a disability, this is going to impact your long-term outlook towards life. One thing to keep in mind is that even people with paraplegia, after 6 to 8 months, go back to their baseline level of happiness. So we have this psychological immune system where we recover over a period of time. You have to reframe or recontextualize life situation, such as focusing on what is right within what is wrong. Could things have gone worse and they didn't? And can I be grateful for what is preserved and not lost? Can I be more compassionate towards myself and others who are dealing with a more difficult life challenge? Is this limiting me in some ways and reframing me, refocusing me to focus on deeper spiritual values and reconnect with my family? Am I by becoming aware of my limitations and transience, am I going to start focusing more on the present moment and savor the moment and enjoy what is left instead of just mind wandering all day long? So these are some examples of how you can reframe, recontextualize. The beauty of human brain is that we have almost infinite ways of looking at the same situation. And none of this means that you are negating the original challenge, but you're trying to grow despite it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think I hear you saying, if your life seemed happy before, it doesn't mean that a changed life cannot also be viewed as happy, right?
Yeah, and I think if you change, absolutely, I think you change your definition of completeness or whole right. you, and you could have paralysis of your left arm, for example, and still be complete because you are not just the physical body, and transcend that limitation to some extent. Yes, you're absolutely right, Carrie, and you have to just start placing your attention differently.
To Abdi in Minneapolis. Hey, Abdi, thanks so much for waiting. Hi.
Thank you very much. I want to thank the doctor, and I wish him, you and him the best. You know, I'm thinking about cross-culture or from country to country way of dealing resiliency. And from what I have observed in my limited observation is that many of us are following people who became famous for their musical, technical skills and not because of their personality skills. And when they have stress or problems, they might resort to risky behaviors. And those people that we followed, we might also follow them in the way they solve problems.
Ah.
So that's number one. The other thing is I think reading these stories of the way spiritually faith, I think, plays a big role in helping. And I believe that focusing on the future helps you to enjoy the moment. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Sood?
Yeah, so thank you for that question. So one is, I personally do not admire just people for their how famous they are or their material wealth. I admire people for the values they live by. And I think if you focus, if your core focus is on values, not the allure of this wonderful music, etc., then you will be able to separate wheat from chaff, and you'll be able to focus on your core values. And if that person is not engaged in those values, you don't really need to absorb that part of that person. There is some genetic basis to what you're sharing because a lot of people who are seeking novelty and do take high risk sort of situations are people who are most vulnerable to addiction and gambling and so on. So these people who are very creative may sometimes be biologically vulnerable. And my suggestion will be for you to be compassionate towards them rather than judge them or embody the wrong message. You know, one thing about future versus present moment, we talk a lot about being in the present moment. It is almost impossible to be in the present moment. And and many times when I share this with patients, they just look at me and with a sense of relief because we've been trying this. Because any species that has imagination, intellect, and has to take care of babies can't be completely in the present moment. What we are trying to do is to be intentional about how you engage with the moment, be it present, past, or future. So when you intentionally engage with this, focusing more on gratitude and compassion, and you engage with the moment as you choose to be, then it doesn't matter whether it is past, present, or future. And so I would like to dissolve this whole concept of, you know, thinking about the future. Just be intentional and you'll find your resilience and happiness.
Dr. Amit Sood is the author of the Mayo Clinic Handbook to Happiness. We talked last November. We're listening back to the conversation today. A lot of the stories of resilience that we heard that hour were from older listeners. So I asked Dr. Sood if there was a correlation that he was aware of between age and happiness.
There's good research to show, Carrie, that as you get older, you get wiser. And wisdom, which leads to focusing on what is more important in life, which is what is happening in front of you and your relationships, that you invest more in relationships, and that is how you become happier. So yes, I think, and there's of course a selection bias that, you know, people who are happier, people who are more resilient tend to withstand the rigors of life and live longer. What is most exciting is that we have looked at all of this information and we've really whittled it down to science where you can actually, you don't have to go through life's adversities to embody the attitude of gratitude. what we do is we try to share the neural vulnerabilities that prevent us from being resilient. And there are some specific attention and emotion exercises that work out the right networks of the brain, which foster that attitude at a relatively young age. The attitude of gratitude, of compassion, of acceptance, of forgiveness. And in over 20 clinical trials, we have found that in a relatively short period of time, people report they have become more resilient, happier, and have lower stress.
To the phones to Chris in Apple Valley. Hey, good morning, Chris. Hi.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing well. Who are you thinking about when it comes to resilience?
I have a friend. He is a, I was a Navy SEAL. I was active duty from through the height of both of the wars. And I had a friend, and we were in Afghanistan, and he went into a room, and he actually got shot 28 times.
Wow.
He took the majority, he took about 18 rounds into his body armor before he passed out, but
wow.
They ended up getting him out, and we medevaced him back, and he is fully recovered now. He survived those wounds, and now he has stayed very active, and he actually works with PTSD patients now for the VA, helping them through all of their stuff. And a really good friend of ours that we went through training with, Dr. C, you might know, recognize this name, but his name is Eric Greitens. And he actually just wrote a book, Resilience, himself. And it's just, you know, they did a lot of stuff. And that was one of the big things he said, is just stay active. And I think one of the biggest things for me that always stands out is my buddy, his name is Mike. He, I think it was about 2 years ago, he just climbed Mount Rainier after recovering from all those injuries.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, Dr. Suit, I have to tell you, when I asked for examples, I had no idea that we'd hear from people like Chris and Christina about these examples. But what do you take from that story?
Oh, never break. Bend, but do not break.
Right.
Never live in fear. Never have self-doubt. Do not believe in people who do not believe in you. And just never break. Always keep pushing forward. Live a selfless life. Think about how you can be of value, how you can serve a higher meaning. And this whole motive of serving a purpose larger than yourself can suffuse you with so much strength that you can overcome most adversities in life.
Do not believe in people who do not believe in you. Say something else about that.
Well, so, and I have struggled with this all my life. People see you based on who they are, not based on who you are. Because that's just the way human mind operates. We look at the world through the colored lenses that we wear. So people just can't see your good intentions. They typically see the outcome of your actions. They don't see the effort you placed in. So, and they'll look at you, they'll judge you based on their strengths, not your strengths. So for all these reasons, you are likely to be undervalued. Your strengths are less likely to be recognized. So what I've found is that people who have valued me, people who have cheered me up, people who have reminded me that I'm a good human being are the people who have helped me grow. People who have shamed me, they've just put me down. I used to believe them. I don't anymore. I just trust my intentions and my effort. And that is it.
So you're saying that if you have someone in your life who is negative potentially about themselves, but also about you, they're not really seeing the true qualities that you possess. It's a reflection of how they see themselves. I've never thought about it that way.
Well, I think we look at the world based on who we are.
Yeah.
And there is, again, a large body of research here, Chris, that shows that we look at the world based on our worldview. You know, when you're watching a university soccer match, for example, you'll always feel that the other team did more fouls than your team did. and there's several research studies that show it. So I think we need to focus more on our intentions and our effort. And not the reward that society provides, because, you know, if you go back 2,000 years ago, you wouldn't really make a career playing baseball. So society keeps changing what it rewards based on its perceived need.
Right.
So listen to your inner voice. Listen to your conscience.
Back to the phones here to Eric in Golden Valley. Hey, Eric. Thanks so much for waiting. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
Doing good. What are you thinking about?
So, you know, I just like to bring awareness. We call it 22 a day. I'm a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still in the Minnesota Army National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And 22 veterans commit suicide a day. It's really an unfortunate thing, but there's always someone to talk to. When I was going through training, I found out that I was going to go straight into a deployment with my unit. I was gone for almost 2 years.
Wow.
Away from my family. In that time, I found out that, you know, the people who I normally relied on to talk to really, you know, couldn't really relate to it. And what I found out was that I had other friends who were in the service before and they've deployed, and they're really the people that I talked to. They're the ones that I was able to relate to because, you know what, my family members don't want to hear that we got mortared today or something like that. But my friends that have been through it say, hey, you know what, I remember that, and it used to be a peace of mind when I was away, when I was in Afghanistan.
Eric, thank you. I think we're losing the phone, but I just made a note as I was listening to you to ask Dr. Sood about shared experience and how powerful that can be for resilience.
Oh, gosh. When I can relate to you, then I know what you're speaking. Again, there have been many studies done. For example, women who have had children are much more compassionate to women who are pregnant. University students who shared the same date of birth to someone telling story about suffering had much more compassion versus others. So when we relate to the other person, then we immediately validate that person from within their perspective because we know what they're talking about. When we do not relate the person, we are often judging them or just plain feeling sorry or even in fear that something that, like that may happen to us. So being able to understand the person, validate them from within their perspective is the first step to be compassionate, to be truly healing. And from there starts intention to help and then actual effort to help. So what Eric was talking about, people who have true, authentic compassion. And that is what we need in the world to prevent this 22 a day. We need truly compassionate counselors, family givers, family members, caregivers, friends who can really attend to these people who are serving us at the front lines.
You know, Dr. Sood, I was also thinking, listening to Eric and our other caller who'd been in the military, about that sense of mission and purpose and how connected that is to resilience. And it's what you started out saying about zooming in and zooming out. That sense of mission and purpose is the thing that helps you zoom out, isn't it?
Absolutely. You've heard of grandmas lifting car to save their grandkids. You know, how can they lift 3,000-4,000 pounds? Because that mission gives them that shot of that boost of energy so they can do the impossible. Having a sense of mission and purpose is extremely important to align all the forces of our life to make a difference. Otherwise, our energy just gets scattered and is lost.
To the phones to Rachel in Eagan. Hey, hi, Rachel.
Good morning.
Good
Thanks
morning.
So much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'd like to mention that Moses from the Torah has been teaching people for generations and generations about taking care of themselves. In the Parsha or the chapter, Yitro, which would be Jethro in English,
mm-hmm.
While the Israelites are in the desert for 40 years with him, and just before Moses goes to Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments, his father-in-law, Jethro, for whom the Parsha is named after, comes to him and says, Moses, oh my gosh, you have got to get a hold here. You are trying to help everybody resolve their conflicts, and you can't do that to yourself. You have to learn to delegate, and you have to teach people how to help solve conflict as it comes up.
That makes a lot of sense.
And so the idea is that you have to put on the mask when you're on the airplane. You know, it comes down. You have to put your mask on first before you can help anybody else.
Dr. Sood, does that make sense to you?
Yes, let Moses know that science is completely backing you now. it's amazing that this is part of what excites me a lot is that what we have believed over the years, what my grandma or great grandma used to teach me, is what exactly science is talking about. I just met recently an official from Rural Health, and they said, you know, what you're doing about bringing gratitude and compassion back to medicine, that is actually cutting edge. Proton beam is cutting edge too, but gratitude and compassion and forgiveness are cutting edge, and I hope they remain cutting edge for the foreseeable future.
It's Dr. Amit Sood. He's the author of the Mayo Clinic Handbook to Happiness. You can read more about the book on The Thread.